In this podcast episode, I am diving so deep into how to manage and reduce social anxiety in your life from someone who has been there, done that. Welcome to Grow With Intention, the podcast for people who want to create a life that feels really bloody good. There are a few things that I want to be really clear about before I kick off with the really like actionable, practical tips. And one of the first things I want to say is this is not a podcast episode about how to become a socially charismatic, you know, not awkward person. I am still to this day an awkward human being. I fumble over my words. I say dumb stuff. I get overexcited about things. What this episode is more so about is like how to become comfortable with who you are, how to get to a place where you are comfortable in your own skin to the point where you're not experiencing social anxiety all of the bloody time. I also want to say social anxiety also looks very different for different people. There are actually different subtypes of social anxiety. I have known people who are primarily socially anxious when they enter spaces with a lot of people where a lot of people could be looking at them. I've also known people who are much more socially anxious about their appearance. If they think there's something wrong with their appearance, that really puts them into a spin. There are people who are totally fine talking to someone one-on-one, but you pop them in a group setting and they can't speak. No matter what brand of social anxiety you have, this episode will help you. So social anxiety in my life has looked like a lot of crying in bathrooms. I have not cried in a bathroom in a really long time, and I love that for me. It's unrelated. Relatable at this stage in my life. It's looked like not going to certain events out of fear. I'm now at a point where that just doesn't really faze me. I'll go to pretty much any event, and I do often. Part of my social anxiety has been more performance anxiety. So I used to dread going to workout classes. I had multiple workout classes where I would go and I'd actually be tearing up during the class because I would just feel like I was doing everything wrong and people would know. When I first got my license, I was so scared to go and get petrol because I was so scared that people would judge me and be like, she doesn't know how to put petrol in her car, which is just insane to think about at this stage in my life because I'm like, what do you mean? And I love that. I used to be terrified of going to coffee shops and working at coffee shops because I felt like people were looking at me. I used to be terrified of making phone calls. I used to be so big on ruminating on what I should have said or should have done. And I have a history of being labeled as either too quiet, but also rude and standoffish. I've had multiple people in my life assume that I am rude. I don't like them because of my social anxiety. It's such a weird thing that you experience. On the other hand, anyone who knows me really well would say like the opposite. They would say that I talk too much because I do. I talk a lot and I'm definitely not a rude person. So it is a funny contradiction. And a lot of people with social anxiety, like you get it. If you've experienced social anxiety, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's so weird how you're perceived so differently from people who see you at your most anxious state versus people who know and love you. You are almost a different person. Now, all the things I just listed, I really don't struggle with most of that these days. I'm a lot more comfortable in my skin. I'm a lot more comfortable with who I am. I still have socially anxious moments, but it's just not a big part of my life. But I also did a lot to work on my social anxiety. The natural progression of any kind of anxiety or mental health issue is to get worse unless you do something about it. And I've been very active throughout my 20s in doing something about my social anxiety. So in this episode, I want to dive deep on what I have done that has helped me to get to where I am, where I feel like I am confident about who I am. And a lot of these are really actionable steps that anyone could take, but they've taken me years to learn. So let's talk about idea number one, which is all about your limiting beliefs. This is actually something I think people get wrong with social anxiety. They think that people with social anxiety are riddled with beliefs like, I'm not good enough, I'm weird, I'm unlikable, I'm not interesting, etc., etc. And sure, sometimes those beliefs will pop up for people who struggle with social anxiety. But I believe that those kind of negative beliefs are actually quite transient and they shift based on the context you're in, right? Like when I'm with my family, I feel like a very likable, interesting, bubbly, friendly person. But if you pop me in a different context, I may not feel that way about myself. Also, lots of people have those beliefs and don't have social anxiety, right? A ton of people think of themselves as odd and strange, and they do not struggle with social anxiety. The beliefs that I worked on the most when it came to my social anxiety that actually helped the most were my shoulds, my musts, and my ought tos. So for example, I had this idea that I should be liked and that it was not okay if people didn't like me. I felt like I needed to be interesting and engaging at all times. And if I wasn't, there's something wrong with me. I also held on to beliefs like, well, if people don't like me, that actually means something about me, when that's not the case at all. I'm also going to say that these beliefs didn't actually come to me in terms of words. Like, I would never say to myself, I should be liked and people not liking me is not okay. It just came as a sense in my body. And that's what a lot of limiting beliefs show up as. It's not tangible words in your brain. It's just like a feeling. And the most powerful way that I've changed these beliefs hasn't been through positive affirmations. It hasn't been through positive thinking. It's actually been through deep observation. So something you want to start doing if you have social anxiety is whenever you are having a conversation with someone and you don't think that what they're saying is that interesting, maybe you're not that engaged, or maybe you don't even like the person, something that you can do is notice your feelings and thoughts about that person and notice how they aren't facts. They're just feelings. They aren't written anywhere in the world. They're not real. They're just in your head and in your body. Notice how even though you're not having a great time in the conversation, or maybe you don't like this person, that that doesn't actually mean anything about the person. Notice how other people love this person, even though maybe you're not vibing with them. Notice how meaningless it is that you don't like this person or you're not enjoying this conversation. This practice seems harsh and it's not something I'd recommend doing a lot, but I do find it helps you to become a lot less attached to your thoughts. A lot of the social anxiety talk is like, try to convince yourself that you are a likable, engaging, interesting, amazing human being, which really has a ceiling as to how much it can help. Because even if you believe all these things about yourself, even if you think that you are wonderful, incredible, smart, fun to be around, there are going to be people that don't think that. Even the most likable people have people that don't like them. And a lot of social anxiety is actually not being able to accept that other people may not vibe with you or may not understand you, is more the word. That at times you will be misunderstood, that people will see you incorrectly, that people just won't fuck with you. So developing this strong belief that it's okay that other people don't find you interesting, engaging, and likable is actually a much more helpful practice than just trying to convince yourself that you're likable and great and wonderful. The other deep observation practice that I have is whenever I notice social anxiety rising up in my body, when I'm having a conversation with someone, when I'm in a group setting, actually catch yourself in that moment and notice how you are feeling and the beliefs that are driving those feelings, right? So say you are in a one-on-one conversation with someone and you notice you've got that little social anxiety niggle in your body. What is your body telling you? What is your mind telling you in that moment? Is it saying, oh, I need to perform well here, or this person must like me? Almost always that'll be the case. And to get a little bit woo, I talk about this a lot more in the Life Map, actually, which is my workbook for goal setting. It'll be linked in the show notes. But I truly believe that the deep observation of these mental habits without judgment, when you notice them over and over again in a kind of accepting, interested, and curious way, it can dissolve them. The third deep observation practice for social anxiety is noticing your low tolerance for difficult emotions. So if you have social anxiety, you also have a low tolerance for embarrassment, for example. You have a low tolerance for awkwardness. You probably have a low tolerance for shame. Not many people have a high tolerance for shame. You probably just have a low tolerance in general for uncomfortable, nervous feelings. And that actually perpetuates your anxiety. So for example, you go to a coffee shop and you chat with the coffee shop owner, but you say something that's a little awkward and embarrassing. How you react to that embarrassment is different to how other people will react to that embarrassment. So my partner, for example, he's a pretty socially charismatic dude. Most people like him and he's very at ease with himself. If he said something embarrassing at a coffee shop, he just wouldn't really think about it afterwards. He'd be able to feel that feeling of embarrassment and then just let it go. Someone with social anxiety notices that feeling of embarrassment, has a very low tolerance for it, fixates on that feeling of embarrassment, and doesn't really regulate because you don't accept that feeling. You don't think that it's okay to have that feeling. Emotional regulation on its own is like a whole topic for someone with social anxiety or any kind of anxiety or mental health issue. But to move past social anxiety, you actually need to up your tolerance for feelings like embarrassment, awkwardness, or just nervousness, etc., etc. This is a really key piece of the puzzle when it comes to moving past social anxiety. Knowing that those feelings are okay, and once you convince your body that those feelings are okay, you'll find that they fade much more quickly. And to keep it a little more woo, we're going to talk about accepting your flaws. So once again, a lot of positive thinking and social anxiety talk talks about almost eradicating any acknowledgement of your flaws. Like, we're supposed to just think that we're perfect, beautiful, amazing all the time. I think that that is harmful to certain people who think too much. I think that a bigger part of your growth is actually accepting that you have traits and behaviors that are not perfect. A lot of my social anxiety came from me not accepting what I perceived to be as flaws. For example, I've always thought of myself as an awkward person, or at least in my 20s, I have thought of myself as awkward, and not in that really like cutesy, like, oh my God, I'm just a little bit awkward way, but just in a like, Jesus, I say some dumb stuff sometimes. And once again, I was shooting on myself. I shouldn't be awkward. I should talk with ease and grace. All sentences must come out fully formed and they must sound perfect and eloquent. But once I deeply accepted that I can be a bit of an awkward human being sometimes, my care about being awkward just started to diminish. And I started to just like not give two shits if I was a little bit awkward in conversation. I want to be able to say, yeah, and then from there, my awkwardness went away, but that's just not true. I still can be really awkward in conversations, but I care a lot less. And I also noticed that other people don't care either. And I think the more comfortable you are with how you are as a person can actually influence other people to feel more comfortable with how you are as a person. People can sense when you're not comfortable with yourself and they pick up on that energy. There's this really great exercise from author Sam Bennett, and she wrote the book Get It Done, and she calls it the sometimes game. I really recommend if you have social anxiety, do this. Firstly, write down off the top of your head something that someone else might say about you, or some way that someone else might describe you that would just like kill you a little. It would feel like a stab in the chest. So for example, you might write down, you're so full of yourself. You're so weird. You're so awkward. You're so boring. Then you want to take those statements and you want to turn them into sometimes statements. Sometimes I'm really fucking weird. Sometimes I am kind of full of it. Sometimes I really don't shut up. Sometimes I'm annoying. And it's also important to do the reverse and realize that the same logic applies. Write down the biggest compliments that someone could give you. So for example, you are so full of joy. You are so bubbly. You are so enthusiastic. You have such good energy. Turn those into sometimes statements as well. So sometimes I am full of joy. Sometimes I am a bundle of good energy to be around. Sometimes I can be so kind. A big idea that fuels social anxiety isn't having personality flaws, because everyone has personality flaws. It's actually not thinking that personality flaws are acceptable. And there's also something to be said about how, you know, a flaw to one person can be a bloody treasure to another person. I really struggled with this idea of like, I am not allowed to be too opinionated. I'm not allowed to be unkind at times. I'm not allowed to be uninteresting. I'm not allowed to be not bubbly and happy and energetic. And part of overcoming anxiety is actually accepting that it's okay to be those ways sometimes, and that everyone has ways of being that they don't love sometimes. And this doesn't mean that if you have flaws, you shouldn't work on them. Obviously, if you have a habit of being really rude in conversation, I don't think anyone listening to this would have that habit, but you should do something about it. But I guarantee you that working from your flaws from a place of non-judgment is going to get you a whole lot bloody farther than working from your flaws from a place of, I shouldn't be that way. The next thing that I think is so important to talk about in the context of social anxiety is rumination. If you have social anxiety, you have a rumination problem. Rumination is actually a really interesting thing because it is present in every single mental health disorder. If you have a mental health disorder, you have a rumination problem. So if you can learn to manage your rumination immediately, you reduce your risk of any mental health disorder. And you can learn to manage rumination. I know because I have had to do it. And it's been an intense journey, but far out, I am so much better at managing rumination than I ever have been before in my life. Social anxiety comes with two types of rumination, and I also feel like a bit of the third, but mostly what's talked about is pre-event rumination. So pre-event, you're panicking, you're going, oh my God, how am I going to perform? This is going to be a nightmare. You're almost playing pictures of what your event that you're going to could look like, what stupid things you might say. And then there is post-event rumination. So post-event rumination is much the same, but you're replaying over the things that you said in your head, and you're going, oh God, I can't believe I said that. You're thinking of different ways people could have interpreted what you said, et cetera, et cetera. So if anyone is listening to this and they haven't experienced social anxiety, you're just kind of listening to it out of interest, I would compare post-event rumination and even possibly pre-event rumination to anxiety. So most people who don't have social anxiety have experienced anxiety, which is the night after an event where you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I did that. Did I say that to that one person? What do they think of me now? Imagine that, but imagine it quite literally after any social event that you have ever, even when drinking is not involved, even if it's like a one-on-one meeting with someone. That is social anxiety rumination. And it's truly a nightmare. So interestingly, I have struggled with social anxiety, but these days I actually have a lack of pre-event rumination. Sometimes I think I should have more pre-event rumination. I don't worry enough. And it's as soon as I get there that I'm like, and I have to really manage the post-event rumination. The, oh God, I said that. How did they perceive me there? What do they think of me here? That's what I worry about. I used to truly believe, well, there's no way that I can change this style of thinking. This is just the way I am. I am programmed this way and I have been since I was a teenager. But that's not true. And I know that because I've been able to reprogram myself. The main mental trick to managing your rumination is managing your attention. I actually recently released a course called Train Your Brain for Happiness, How to Stop Overthinking, I believe is the name, in Intention. I'm going to make it free for the 2 weeks after this podcast goes live. That way, if you want to have a little bit of a taste of that course, it's on Intention. You can download it and access it, especially for my socially anxious girlies. It's a gift to you. But essentially, managing your attention is treating your brain as if it's like the TikTok for you page. You cannot stop something from appearing on your feed. Sometimes I get the weirdest stuff appear on my feed, but I can determine how I react to that stuff that appears on my feed. So either you can sit there, you can engage with it, you can ruminate on it, give it a ton of attention, or you can, you know, let it be there, but not engage with it and move on to the next thing. This isn't you trying to push away your thought. That's categorically not helpful. This is just you not smothering it with a heap of attention. Anyone who has experienced any kind of rumination problem knows that rumination is intense. It sucks you in. It can feel a little bit addictive, which is why I've created a whole course on it, on Intention. And I truly couldn't capture everything I want to say about it in this episode. So I'm just going to direct you towards that in the show notes. But just know that this is a habit that you can break. It's a mental habit. It's a style of thinking that you are able to move away from, and your life will immediately improve once you intentionally work at moving away from rumination style patterns of thinking. The next thing that we've got to talk about when it comes to social anxiety is self-imposed exposure therapy. It would be remiss of me not to mention this. I am the queen of self-imposed exposure therapy. All throughout my 20s, this is something that I have done to myself. It's like I love a little self-torture. I've signed myself up to travel alone, to go to events that I was terrified of alone, to go on bloody Bumble BFF dates, which was really nerve-wracking back when. I forced myself to go to workout classes alone. I've organized my own meetups. Like, I have done a lot of stuff on purpose to help me to move past social anxiety. These are things that have made me anxious, and I've done them over and over again until I got to the point where I was like, oh, I actually feel kind of comfortable with that activity. And it really does suck, because I know anyone with social anxiety does not want to hear this. This is just the last message you want to hear. You want to do the inner work where you're on your own in your room doing your journaling, and that stuff is really important. However, if you're missing out on self-imposed exposure therapy, you are doing yourself a disservice. If you are so deeply impacted by social anxiety that you feel like it's hard to like leave the house, I would recommend getting the assistance of a therapist to work through this with you. I do feel like a lot of this stuff can be done without putting down money for a therapist, but I also encourage you to follow your own intuition there. I would say most therapists that I've been to have no idea when it comes to social anxiety. Like, they just don't really get it. You need to find a specialist that understands social anxiety and has like a deep understanding of it too, because otherwise they're going to be more harmful than helpful. Mind you, I've only been to like a few therapists in my 20s, so that may just be my limited experience. So going back to the activity that's going to help if you're doing the self-imposed exposure therapy, this is a good prep activity for someone who needs a little more prep and who has more of that pre-event rumination that I don't have. This is the worst case scenario, most likely scenario, and best scenario journaling exercise. So I used to be really anxious about going to work on my little laptop in coffee shops. I used to be so scared that people would think I was a weirdo for working on my laptop. So I could write out the worst case scenario. You know, someone taps me on the shoulder and goes, God, you're a bloody weirdo. Look at you on your little laptop. What are you doing? That'd suck. It's also very unlikely, but it's worst case. And then you've got most likely, you know, someone might glance at me, or a few people People might glance at me as I work on my laptop, but that's probably about all that will happen. Best case scenario, someone comes up to me and is like, hey, what are you working on? I too am working on my laptop. Let's be friends. A lot of the benefits of self-imposed exposure therapy come from prediction errors. So our brain is constantly making predictions about what is going to happen in the situation we're about to put ourselves in. So for example, you go to an event and if you're like, oh, no one's going to talk to me, I'm going to start conversations and people will snub me and move on to the next person. Those are predictions that your brain is making. Your job is to disprove those predictions. So you want to be clear on what your worst outcome scenario predictions are so that you can notice that they don't usually come to life. Something that is also shown to be helpful from what I've read on social anxiety is actually filming yourself in social scenarios. Obviously, this is really hard to do and it is best done with a therapist. So sometimes therapists will record you while you're talking to maybe their assistant or something like that, or they'll do this exposure therapy and film you from afar, and then they'll get you to watch it back to show you that, hey, you like came across pretty well. You seemed like a pretty normal person. There's actually nothing interesting that you're doing here that makes you stand out from other people. And sometimes you actually need that evidence to prove to yourself, like, I'm actually, you know, not that special. Like, I'm just a normal average human being. And weirdly, I've actually found this with the podcast episodes that I've been recording. Watching them back, at the time I was like, oh God, I'm being so awkward and strange. And then I watch them back and I'm like, wait, you know, you actually seem like a pretty like normal and interested and enthusiastic, nice person. That shouldn't be surprising, but sometimes you do need that video evidence of that. If you can recruit someone in your life to get some kind of video evidence of you in a social interaction, that would be helpful. But you know, this is a stretch. The next thing I want to say, it could be a bit controversial, but it is something that I think is important. If you have social anxiety, you shouldn't be hanging out with judgy people. This is kind of a personal rule that I have for myself that I try to follow. And I think anyone that has any experience with social anxiety should follow it. Minimize your time with people who judge other people for stupid stuff. People who would make fun of someone else's laugh or the way that they walked. People who would make fun of someone for putting themselves out there, for starting a new business venture or creating a social media presence. People who would comment on another person's outfit or body feature or facial feature being weird. Those aren't your people. And if you have someone that you love that is also super judgy, I just recommend talking to them and explaining why that behavior is harmful to you as someone who's trying to manage your social anxiety and trying to overcome it. These conversations are so hard. I'm not going to lie. I'm definitely not an expert when it comes to hard conversations. One thing that I have found successful when it comes to these difficult conversations is actually bringing it back to yourself, making it a lot less about the other person and bringing it way back to yourself. So for example, I've had a situation where a friend would behave towards other people in a way that made me paranoid. And I was like, oh my God, are they doing that to me too behind my back? And I would just say like, hey, when you do that, it actually makes me a little paranoid. It makes me worry that you do the same thing to me. And that person actually took it really well. It didn't work out in the end. And I probably could have done a bit more or maybe been a bit more intentional and serious when I would say that so that they knew, you know, I wasn't just casually lightly raising it. It was something that was really affecting me. But it was a very non-confrontational way to confront someone. And it didn't indicate that that person was a bad person or unkind, but it just sort of focused on, ooh, that's how this makes me feel. I'm conscious that some people don't judge maliciously. They might judge because they feel like that's what you do. That's how you connect. In high school, I definitely judged more than I do now. And it was because I thought that was like what you were supposed to do. Some people judge because they actually don't know what else to talk about. Like they're not sure how to fill the space. They just say words. Getting back to why this is important. If you have social anxiety, I think it can be really healing to hang out with people who are really accepting and non-judgmental. I can usually smell when people are really accepting and non-judgmental and it's like I'm a bloody moth. Immediately I'm just like, yes, please, more. You are my person. Because it is so healing for me to know that I can be in a conversation and I'm not being judged and I'm being accepted deeply for who I am. It is very healing. And in the same way, if you're an anxiously attached person and you cling to someone who is avoidant and really inconsistent, it can be really harmful and confusing for you. When you hang out with people who are really judgmental, who constantly make you think about how you are perceived and how other people are perceived and that you should be perceived in a certain way. Just avoid time with people who are super judgy and with people who make you feel bad about who you are. Another thing that has helped me on my social anxiety journey is working on my self-image. So there's actually a book called Imagery-Based CBT for Social Anxiety, a long name. And basically in it, they say that people with social anxiety actually get bombarded with a lot more negative self-images in their brain than people without. So if you have social anxiety, you are visualizing how people have reacted to you in the past, and usually you're exaggerating it. You also have a lot of images of you in your head and how other people see you. But obviously those images aren't real. They're just images that your mind has actually made up, and usually they are also exaggerated. On the Intention app, sorry, I'm plugging this a lot. That wasn't even intentional, but I do have a meditation. It's called Updating Your Self-Image Meditation. Basically, it's all about dwelling on really positive images of yourself from the perspective of someone who loves you deeply and cares for you deeply and ideally accepts you and doesn't judge you. So for me, I might think about my partner, who is one of the least judgmental people that I know. I might think about my sister and how she sees me, and really create a bunch of mental images of how those people perceive me. And these are images that you want to compete with the previous images that your brain has created that are inaccurate and exaggerated. This is just one of those really quick and easy practices that you can start doing, and immediately you'll probably notice a shift. I certainly did when I started doing this. If you want guidance, Intention, Update Your Self-Imagery Meditation. It is really good. The last thing I want to talk about is accepting uncertainty. So Martin Seligman, in his book Learned Optimism, talks about how people who are more optimistic, people that are generally happier, have a tendency, when things go wrong in their life, to blame other people and to blame their circumstances. I think some people take this too far. I've certainly hung around some people where I'm like, wow, like, you don't take any responsibility for any of your behaviors, and they straight up will blame other people and their circumstances. Obviously, that's not who you want to become. However, when it comes to social anxiety and how you perceive others' behavior and how you make meanings around other people's behavior, I do think it is really important to start tapping into external circumstances as well as the people themselves. So for example, I remember being at the climbing gym one morning, and there's barely anyone at the climbing gym of a morning. People that climb seem to like to climb at night. But I walked past this girl and I like smiled at her and waved at her, and she ignored me. Socially anxious thinking would immediately go to, well, she thinks that I'm a bit weird, a bit overly enthusiastic, uncool. She's just not interested in talking to me. But there are also some external circumstances as well as her related things that could be more accurate reasoning for why she didn't respond to me. Firstly, she might not have seen me at all. She could have been so hyper-focused. I think she had headphones in, you know? She was vibing, very much in her own head. Secondly, she could have been really tired. Thirdly, maybe she got into fight with her partner that morning and she just was not feeling it. Maybe it's early morning for her and she just has a rule where she just doesn't engage with people early morning. There are so many other reasons that this person may not have responded to my greeting. And there is like a 1% chance that this girl was like, oh, that chick looks like a weirdo and I don't want to talk to her. You know, it's possible. I don't think it's what happened, but it's possible. But it helps me a lot more to just assume that she was tired. And this is something that you need to get good at when you struggle with social anxiety, is accepting uncertainty and trying to lean into the most helpful version of events. Like, whenever you think someone is socially rejecting you because of something you did or a problem with your personality and who you are, instead, write down 10 other reasons why they may have acted the way that they acted. You are never going to be certain about which of those reasons is truth. It's totally possible someone just doesn't like you. It's also totally possible that they've got their own shit that they're working through, that they were having a really bad day, that they were really hungry, that they, you know, didn't really notice you or think about you. Let yourself sit with the uncertainty of that and acknowledge that there is no one truth, and you're probably never going to know the truth. It feels a lot better to lean into this kind of thinking versus, well, everything's because of me thinking, which is, in a way, and I say this about social anxiety and I feel like I'm allowed to because I have experienced it, social anxiety can be very self-focused and almost a little bit narcissistic, because you get a very big sense of, well, it's all because of me. but that's just not true. And I mean narcissistic in terms of like it's a narcissistic tendency, obviously not narcissistic personality disorder. So now you've gotten all of the juicy podcast information. We're moving straight into Recs of the Week. This is something that I'm doing every week on the podcast. I give you 3 recommendations that'll help you to dive a little deeper into the topic of today's episode. And I have a few recommendations when it comes to social anxiety. Imagery-based CBT for social anxiety disorder. It's something along those lines. I'll have the full name in the show notes. I would highly recommend it. It's a very different approach than traditional CBT. Basically, the ideas within it are that, you know, people with social anxiety have way more imagery-based thinking than other people when it comes to social scenarios. We're thinking in pictures and those pictures are not good. And when you work on updating those pictures in a way that is more healthy and helpful using this imagery-based CBT, it can be really helpful overall for your social anxiety. I'm also going to recommend the book How to Be Yourself by Ellen Hendrickson, I think is her name. This is probably my first foray into, hey, like I should do something about this social anxiety outside of therapy with therapists who just weren't super helpful. And the last book I'm going to recommend you is actually called Dating Without Fear, which seems like a weird recommendation, and you're going to read it and it won't apply directly to you. I've actually recommended this in 2 podcast episodes now because it's a really good book, probably one of the better books that I have read on social anxiety, but it's specifically for people who have dating anxiety. Once again, it is going to be listed and linked in the show notes. Now let's talk mini moves. The mini move segment is all about giving you super actionable, really small, immediate things that you can do to take what you've learned from this podcast and actually put them into practice. So you can do this, you know, right after the podcast, you can do it within the week after the podcast, whatever you choose to do. The first mini move is writing down a list of your shoulds. For example, I should be likable. And if I'm not, that's not okay. Or people should like me. And if they do not like me, it means something about me. Really audit all of the shoulds that you have when it comes to social interactions. Think through the social interactions that trigger you the most and write down all of the shoulds that exist. And I guarantee you, you're going to be shocked at how many shoulds that you have. Mini move number 2, pick a person in your life who is deeply non-judgmental, who is very accepting, who also has a good view of you, and sit for just a minute and try to perceive yourself from their perspective. Think back to like a beautiful conversation that you had or an experience that you had with them where it was kind of full of, you know, delight and good feelings, if possible, and consider how they perceived you in those moments. Really visualize it and let those new images of yourself sit in your self-image bank. Mini move number 3, take a social experience that you've had recently that maybe got you a little bit anxious and led you to make some assumptions about how another person felt or thought about you. Write down a list of 10 other alternatives for why they behave the way that they behave and let yourself sit with the uncertainty and the fact that you will never actually know and that that is okay. Try to, if you can, lean into the most helpful explanation while also knowing that there is no absolute truth. That's kind of the hard part of that. A lot of CBT encourages you to like pick one piece of evidence and be like, well, that's the truth. I actually don't find that helpful. I find it more helpful to just flexibly sit with the idea that like, I'll never know, but I'm just going to lean into this one idea over here that helps me more than those other ideas over there. If you liked this podcast episode, you are going to love my app Intention, which is all about doing the mind management work to create a life that feels good. I have a bunch of very actionable exercises that you can slip into your morning routine, your afternoon routine, that are all about retraining your brain and retraining your mind to think in more helpful ways. I appreciate you so very much, and you will hear from me very soon.